Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian. I'm Daniel Messer. People get fired up and upset about the dumbest things sometimes. Whether it's sports teams or types of music or something as inconsequential as what car someone chooses to drive. People will tell you that a Ford is better than a Chevy, which is better than a Toyota, but not as good as a Honda. Or something dumb like that. In the end, you celebrate the team you like for whatever reason. You listen to the music that you enjoy, and you drive the thing that suits your needs and hopefully your budget. I'm so out of touch with cars and automobiles, I always have to look at the registration in my car every time I take it in for some kind of service. Why? Because I can't be bothered to remember the year it was manufactured. I literally can't remember the year just sitting right here talking into the mic. 2000-something. You want to start a flame war on any given online forum. All you have to do is show up and say something like, Apple is better than Windows, or Windows is better than Linux. Me, I don't care, because operating systems and applications and programs and services, these are all tools. Windows and Linux and Mac, they all have their pros and cons. I'd never run anything important on a Mac server, nor would I try to record music on Linux, and believe me folks, I've tried to record music on Linux. I use Windows all day at work, and people think I'm crazy when I tell them I actually like Windows 8.1, and I'm looking forward to Windows 10. Still, since I'm fairly well known as a lover of open source projects, people are sometimes shocked, and maybe even a little appalled, that my daily driver, the computer I use most of the time to get things done, is an 11-inch MacBook Air. This is Cyberpunk Librarian, episode 34, What I Use, OS 10. My name is Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood Cyberpunk Librarian, welcoming you back to the show that is all about exploring the intersection of libraries and technology and living that high-tech, low-budget lifestyle. Hello out there in listener land and all you fabulous folks. Cyberpunk Librarian is back on the air, broadcasting at a frequency of 1900 megahertz or 2400 megahertz, depending on how you might acquire your podcasts in your podcatcher of choice. Either way, hey, thank you for tuning in for a personal roundup of some of the apps and software that I use on a regular basis on my daily driving computer, which does indeed happen to be an 11-inch MacBook Air. So why the 11-inch MacBook Air? Well, we'll get into that in a sec, but one of the things I do like about it is that it is 11 inches. This is the smallest MacBook Air. It's the entry-level one. I didn't upgrade it. It's, you know, it's got the 64 gigs of storage. It's got 4 gigs of RAM. But with cloud storage solutions and an external hard drive, I never have any storage problems at all. And I like it because it's so small. This fits into my messenger bag, it's very light, and everything else. So I take my Air, that I affectionately named Angelique, pretty much everywhere I go. It weighs only slightly more than an iPad and a Bluetooth keyboard, so if I'm going to carry an iPad and an Apple Bluetooth keyboard, well, why not just carry a full computer? I use my MacBook Air for almost everything I do. I write on it, I make digital illustrations, I compose and record music on it, and I can use it for work thanks to things like VPNs and a remote desktop program of some kind. The podcast you're listening to right now? Yeah, I'm recording it on my MacBook Air. I'll then edit it on the MacBook Air, I'll upload it from the MacBook Air, and then I'll prepare the online post for the show on a Linux box. I'll do it on the MacBook Air. So if I love open source so much, then why do I use a computer from the walled gardens of Cupertino? Well, never mind the fact that last time I checked, Linus Torvalds, the guy who created Linux, also uses a MacBook, granted with Linux installed upon it. There are multiple reasons, as you might expect. Without diving too deep, I can honestly say that this little Ultrabook is the best laptop I've ever owned. It's light, it's beautiful, it's fast, and it supports a variety of software that's highly compatible with my creative projects. Beyond all the podcasting stuff I do, I'm also an ambient and space musician. I'm a digital illustrator, I occasionally make videos, and I'm a writer. So when it comes to doing so many of those things, I'm of the opinion that the Mac is where it's at for me. Sure, you can do all those things in Windows or Linux, and you can do them quite well. And you can also drive nails with the handle of a screwdriver or the flat part of a saw. As I've said before, it all comes down to using the best tool for the job, and for me, the best tool for many of the jobs that I do is OS X and my little MacBook. So I take my MacBook pretty much everywhere. If I have downtime somewhere, I'll pull it out and write and work on something. When it comes to getting creative things done, I have yet to use a computer that's better for my methods and my madness. So let's pull up the dock on the bottom of the screen, and let's have a look at some of the stuff that I use on a regular basis on OS X. And as you may expect, I'll have links to all of this stuff in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast.
The time has come for us to get down and boogie.
So with this list of applications and software suggestions, I'm going to go a little more freeform than I usually do, because after all, this is just basically at its heart a list. But I did break it down and categorize it and give it some genre and a little organization, because a list without organization is just kind of a mess. So, that said, I've got five categories here that I'm going to talk about. Online stuff, multimedia creation, writing and coding, utilities, and entertainment. Now, some of these applications you'll find that I've talked about earlier on previous episodes, and a couple of them are kind of, I don't know, ubiquitous. Everybody kind of knows about them. So if I seem like I gloss over something and don't give it a whole lot of time, chances are that I've already talked about it, and there's no point in spending 5 minutes talking about something that I already spent 10 minutes talking about on an earlier show. And besides, I don't want to bore you with things that I've already talked about. I would much rather bore you with things that I haven't talked about yet. So with that in mind, we're going to start right off with one of those applications that I've not only talked about, I've made an entire show about. And we're going to start in the online arena with Firefox. Now, I've said before, in kind of a joking sense, but it's not really much of a joke if you look at my workflow, that if I have a favorite operating system, my favorite operating system is Firefox, because I use it on everything, and I do almost everything within Firefox. It takes me a good 10 to 15 minutes to get a brand new Firefox installation set up exactly the way I like it, and that's actually been cut down quite a bit thanks to Firefox Sync. But in a world of web browsers where you can choose between Chrome and, at least on a Macintosh, Safari and Opera and all of that, I still prefer Firefox just simply because the level of extensibility that it has and the number of add-ons available for it and what those add-ons can do just makes more sense to me. So Firefox is where it's at, enough said. I do use other browsers, of course. I'm a web guy. I kind of have to. So if you look at my MacBook here, you'll see that, yeah, it's got Firefox, it's got Chrome, it's got Safari, but only one of those browsers is actually sitting down in the dock where I can get to it using a mouse. The funny thing about that is, we'll take a little side trip here. I don't use the dock all that much. I do have applications down there, and it's fairly lengthy, but most of the time I use Spotlight, because a quick command spacebar brings up Spotlight, type a few letters of the application that I wish to launch, and hit enter. It's much easier than faffing about with a mouse. So if you're using a Macintosh of some variety, whether it be an iMac, a MacBook Pro, a MacBook Air, that new MacBook, I guess, that's out now with the really weird USB-C connector, I really recommend trying to do your stuff with Spotlight, because Spotlight on a Mac is pretty freaking sweet. So, okay, Firefox for web browsing, but goodness knows Daddy likes his RSS feeds, and I've tried different things for RSS. I've even tried in-browser solutions, and I do use an in-browser solution through a service called Feedbin. Now, Feedbin is kind of like Feedly, but I just like Feedbin better for a few reasons. I'm not going to get into that right now. Feedbin or Feedly both have paid subscriptions that you can get in on, and it just allows you a method of syncing your feeds from device to device, computer to computer. Or you can just look at them in a web browser. And I do all of those things with Feedbin. But on my Mac, my little MacBook Air, I use an application called Reader. Now that's R-E-E-D-E-R. Reader is a lovely, simple, easy-to-use RSS aggregator. And what I like it for is the shortcut keys. Now, if you've listened to earlier shows, you know I'm a keyboard junkie. I really like my keyboard shortcuts. I don't do a whole lot with the mouse if I can possibly avoid it. And with Reader, I don't have to. I can navigate quickly through my feeds using J and K, just like you could on the old Google Reader. I can star things using S. I can open things in the browser by simply tapping B. And what browser do I open it in, of course, is Firefox. So Reader and Firefox make for sort of this dynamic duo of content consumption when it comes to my RSS feeds. Because if I see a picture I want, say an image of Wonder Woman or something cool like that, and I want to save that picture, well, I don't save it in Reader. You can right-click and save it. But I sort my stuff out. So I've got an extension in Firefox that helps me do that. So I just hit B, it opens it in Firefox, I'll go get it in a couple minutes after I'm done sorting through this feed. So Reader isn't free, unfortunately. Currently, as I'm recording this right now, I'm looking at it in the Mac App Store, and it's $9.99. So $10, that might seem a little steep for an app. But I am absolutely honest about this, folks. Even if I did not have Reader right now, if I had not previously purchased it, I would drop the $10. It's well worth it for the way it helps me navigate, parse through, save, and manage my RSS subscriptions. And I know that RSS isn't a thing for everybody. Not everybody's into it, but I really am, and I am deeply into RSS. I think RSS is a wonderful technology. So, you know, after all, I'm a podcaster. How do you think podcasts go out? It's RSS. So, yeah, check out Reader, $9.99. Good stuff there. Now, going beyond a browser and an RSS reader, sometimes I simply have to get things done at work. And sometimes I have to get those things done at work when I'm sitting at home. Now, this is not a problem, even though my job is totally a Microsoft shop. We've got a couple little Linux boxes here and there. We've got an iMac and maybe another Macintosh floating around. But for the most part, Windows, 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 still not a problem. Because to do work from home, all I need to do is get into the VPN and bring up Microsoft Remote Desktop. Now, I know what you're thinking, a Microsoft app on a Mac? Oh my God, how bad can it be? Well, the answer is it's not. It's actually really good, and it also happens to be free. And I don't know what people need in a remote desktop app. I need basically to access my desktop remotely, and that's about it. I occasionally transfer files, but I don't actually transfer files using the remote desktop app. You see, I have OneDrive on my computer at work, and I have OneDrive on my computer at home, my MacBook Air. And if I need to transfer something between it, I just simply drop stuff in OneDrive and pick it up on the other end. It's kind of like a wormhole, really. I mean, you can just drop something in there and it's already available on the other side as long as it's not a huge file. So Microsoft Remote Desktop may sound like an odd choice for an online app, but the fact of the matter is it's an indispensable part of my toolkit. I could not do my job without the Microsoft Remote Desktop app. Now, there's a couple of these I've found out. There is a Remote Desktop Client type app by Microsoft, and then there's just an app called Microsoft Remote Desktop. Like I said, check the notes, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast, and I'll have a link to the one I use. I've tried the other, and it's okay. I have no problem with it. It's just that I've used this Remote Desktop app for a while now, and it's just the one I've gotten used to, and I kind of like it. It's very much in the vein of Romina on Linux, which is another Remote Desktop app. It works very much the same, looks very much the same. So yeah, if you're used to one, you'll be easily able to pick this one up too. And to sort of round out the online offerings and the online stuff that I use on a very regular basis, sometimes I need to torrent a file. Now, I know what you're thinking. What is Dan pirating in his basement? Well, the answer is nothing, because Dan doesn't have a basement. However, sometimes I do need to download a Linux distribution, or I need to get some kind of LibreOffice update, or something like that. I mean, those who think that BitTorrent is only for piracy really need to wake up and smell the coffee, because BitTorrent is good for a lot of things. What BitTorrent is really good at is transferring big files, so long as lots of people have that big file and they're offering it on BitTorrent. You know, like a Linux distribution. As a matter of fact, it's usually quicker to download Linux distributions and LibreOffice updates and all kinds of stuff like that using BitTorrent. It's usually far more faster than just downloading it from a website. And so for all of my BitTorrenting needs, I use Transmission, which is, of course, an open source program. Now, I'll be kind of denoting the open source stuff that I use here and there because I think it's important. Firefox, in case you didn't know, is open source as well. Transmission, too, is open source and totally cross-platform. You can download Transmission on pretty much anything that I know of, and it works pretty much the same across the spectrum, which is nice, because I use Transmission on Linux, and I use Transmission on Windows, and I love it. It's not like uTorrent or MooTorrent, depending on who you're talking to, where I don't know what they've done there, but they're just sort of naffing about with their user base, and they try to install malware, and they try to give you stuff that you don't want. Transmission gives you one thing, and that's Transmission. And as a BitTorrent client, it is one of the best. There's no BS, there's no fluffing about and trying to figure out where this thing goes or how this works. You click on the torrent, you tell it to use Transmission to download the torrent, and then you wait for the torrent to finish downloading. It's pretty much that simple. So, for the online spectrum, I recommend Firefox, Reader, Microsoft Remote Desktop, and Transmission. So, jumping off that, let's get right into multimedia creation, which I think is where the Mac really shines. Now, say what you want about Apple and OS X and Yosemite and Mavericks or what the heck ever. Say what you want about the Apple tax. I think there are good reasons why when you go into a design studio, when you go into a multimedia studio where they edit video and edit audio and do things like that, chances are you're going to see quite a few Macs just sort of sitting around. And without getting into the technical details of core audio and optimization and all of that, let's just take it for granted that I think that when I'm making something that's multimedia in nature, whether it's an illustration or a podcast or a video or a song, the Mac is just where it's at for me. Now, if you're making videos on Windows and recording music on Windows and doing stuff with Linux and all that kind of thing, there's nothing wrong with that. That's why the title of the show is OS X, What I Use. It's not OS X, What You Use. But I would love to hear what you use, especially on the Linux side of things, where I'm not as familiar with some of the audio concepts that are available out there. I've tried Ardour. I've done some work in Audacity with recording music. But in the end, I tend to stick to the Mac for my multimedia creation needs. Now, let's get right into digital illustration. And a lot of people think digital illustration equals Photoshop. And it does. I do use Photoshop, but I'm not going to recommend Photoshop at this time because there's something else I want to talk about. Something that I don't think is getting enough attention, and I don't understand why. And this is a photo editor called Pixelmator. Now, if you really want to use Photoshop, but you take a look at Photoshop's price tag, which I don't even know what it is anymore because they've got this weird subscription model, and it's so many dollars per year if you just buy Photoshop, but if you do the whole thing where you get all of the apps, it's more dollars per year. And the last I checked, if you bought Photoshop CS6, it was around $600. Yeah, that seems a little high. Everything seems a little high. How's about $30? Do you think you can handle $30? Because if you can handle $30, then Pixelmator is your jam. Pixelmator pretty much does what I need Photoshop to do, and it does it for a lot less. I've joked before that every time I use Photoshop, I feel like I'm getting $89 out of a $600 program. Well, with Pixelmator, I'm getting $30 out of a $30 program, and in some cases, I probably get $40 out of that $30 program. Pixelmator is just a full-featured image editing app for the Mac, and it does probably 90% of what Photoshop does. That other 10%, you probably don't need anyway. But it does layers, it does filters, it does color correction. You can draw in it, you can edit your photos, you can clean photos up. It's even got built-in filters to clean photos up to make it easy. It's got some wonderful tools for taking care of highlight and shadow and blending things together. And it's just excellent. I mean, every time I use it, I'm surprised that this program only costs $30. And I hate to harp on that, but the reason I do is because you compare it to Photoshop. And if you sit someone down in front of Pixelmator and then you sit them down in front of Photoshop, unless that person is a Photoshop expert, where it's their job to do nothing but Photoshop and image manipulation within it, I bet you'll find that most people have no problem picking up and using Pixelmator too. I use Pixelmator for a lot of things. I use it for image editing, as I've said before. If I take a picture and I need to crop some of that picture out, maybe I need to straighten it a little bit. I can do it with Pixelmator, and I can do it for a heck of a lot less than $600, or like I said, whatever Photoshop costs these days. So if you're in the mood and you're in the market for a really good image editor and you don't want to pay that kind of money for it, Pixelmator is not only worth your money, it is worth your time. And if you already know how to use Photoshop to some degree, you're going to pick up Pixelmator in an afternoon. It's pretty much the same workflow. So, okay, moving beyond the images and image editing and drawing, let's talk about recording. Let's talk about audio, because you're listening to a podcast, you might have listened to my music. If you haven't guessed, I'm kind of an audio kind of guy. So I use two things on Mac when it comes to audio. And one is free because it kind of comes with OS X, and the other you have to pay for. So let's talk about GarageBand, because GarageBand is sort of one of those things that you just get it when you buy a Mac. It's part of OS X. And you know what's wrong with GarageBand? Absolutely nothing. I have no problem with GarageBand. As a matter of fact, this podcast that you're listening to right now is recorded and mixed in GarageBand. And that's despite the fact that I do have Logic Pro 10 on this Mac, and we're going to talk about Logic Pro 10 in just a sec. But let's talk about GarageBand. GarageBand is an easy-to-use audio editor. And by easy-to-use, I mean there was almost no learning curve for me. I took a look at it. It looked a lot like Audacity, which is an open-source audio editor, which I actually recommend, and it works fine on Mac. I have Audacity on this too. It says something about my audio habit when I have not one, not two, but three audio editors on one computer. So yeah, GarageBand is what I use to record my podcast, mostly because I like how Apple handles audio. And GarageBand really just handles everything so nicely. It's got filters for voice, and one of the filters that I use on a regular basis is one called Male Narrator Noisy, which is just sort of part of GarageBand. As a matter of fact, I have this set up as my base podcasting setup that I open a file, and the first thing in that file is a vocal track called Male Narrator Noisy, and that helps filter out all the ambient noise in the room around me. This is a quiet room, but it's not a perfectly silent room. So if you're looking to do simple songs, something where you don't have to have a whole lot of electronic wizardry going on, all kinds of weird, wild stuff. Or if you're just looking to record a podcast or looking to record some audio, GarageBand is really good, and it is also free as long as you've bought a Mac. Now, the big brother to GarageBand is Logic Pro 10. Logic Pro 10 is a professional-grade digital audio workstation, or DAW, as some people sometimes call it, D-A-W. So, I use Logic Pro 10 for music. I really don't use GarageBand for music, though you can, and there's even built-in editors. Or I'm sorry, not editors, built-in instruments in GarageBand. And if you happen to have a MIDI controller, like a MIDI keyboard, getting MIDI sounds to work in GarageBand and Logic Pro involves plugging it into your Mac. That's about it. Yeah. So why Logic Pro 10 over GarageBand? Well, without getting into a huge discussion of why one digital audio workstation is better than the other, it basically amounts to Logic Pro 10 gives me a bigger toolkit. I can do more with it. I have more control over my audio. I have more control over the vocalizations and the instruments and all of that. And I like to record music occasionally, and by occasionally I mean pretty much any time I can get some time to sit down and do it. And an important thing with recording music, for me anyway, is not to be screwing around so much with the program. I don't want to screw around with the program. I want to record some tunes. And if you're a professional musician of any grade, Logic Pro 10 is sort of where it's at if you're using a Mac. Now, if you're going to leave audio behind for a second, and we're just going to keep moving forward, we're going to talk about video editing. And you'll find that with some programs on the Mac, there's sort of like the free version and then there's the premium version. The free video editor on a Mac is called iMovie, and iMovie rocks. I mean, for probably 90% of the population out there trying to make a little video or something like that, iMovie's great. iMovie is absolutely wonderful. There's a program that I've used before on Windows called Corel Video Studio Pro. And Corel Video Studio Pro and iMovie are pretty much the same program. The workflow is very much the same. The timelines are very much the same. What they can do is very much the same. So it kind of blew my mind, you know, when I got my first Macintosh that, hey, look at this iMovie. And wow, it looks like that program that I paid $80 for on the Windows side of things. Now, I don't claim to have wasted $80 on Corel Video Studio. I still use Corel Video Studio on Windows if I happen to be editing video over there. But for most of what I do, including certain library things at work, I use iMovie because, after all, it's easy to get into it. It's easy to make the thing that you want to make so long as it's not too complicated or complex. And then it's easy to just export it out and ta-da, there's your video. Now, for those times when I want, say, the big sister, because we've already talked about Big Brother, let's keep things equal here. If I want the big sister to iMovie, well, that's Final Cut Pro. Now, Final Cut Pro 10 is to iMovie what Logic Pro 10 is to GarageBand. It does pretty much the same thing. The interface looks very similar, but boy, does it do a whole lot more. I can't lie to you. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm a Final Cut Pro 10 expert, because I'm not. I know how to use it. I know how to use it pretty well. I know the ins and outs, and I probably know 30% of what it does. But what it does, at least in my instance, when I do need to edit some pro-level video, is amazing. Not that long ago, preparing for the summer reading program, One of the librarians came to me and said, we need this video that we've already got, but we need a couple changes. Oh, yes, and it needs to be broadcast quality for TV. Like TV, like the thing that sits in your living room? Yes, that TV. Oh, you mean the TV that I don't watch anymore for YouTube? And she told me to shut up, Dan, and wandered off. So I sat down and opened up Final Cut Pro and started working on the video. Now, Final Cut Pro, like I said, is sort of a nuclear solution to a hand grenade problem if all you're going to do is edit a video here and there and call it good. But if you do need that high-level pro video editing software, Final Cut Pro is really a great program for that. Now, unfortunately, Logic Pro and Final Cut Pro are not free. And Unfortunately, these are Apple products, so they do kind of tend towards the expensive side of things. Logic Pro 10 is $200, $199.99, and Final Cut Pro is $300. Wow, I know. The nice thing about this, though, is if you happen to own multiple Macintosh computers, you know, whether you got an iMac and a MacBook or something like that, if you buy them through the Mac Store, which is really the only way you can get them, is through the Mac App Store, which I still have problems saying, you can install them on pretty much any computer that uses your iTunes account to buy stuff through the Mac App Store. So that means, you know, if you have two computers, you can put it on both, and it's still the same price. That's kind of cool, and that does sort of make it worth your while. So, okay. Last thing, and this is sort of a tag along to Final Cut Pro. If you're going to spend the money on Final Cut Pro, then you may as well spend another $50 and get yourself compressor. Compressor is one of those things that it sounds like a sort of knockoff thing that you probably don't need, but once you use it a couple times, you'll realize that you do need it. And what compressor is an application that takes a video file and makes it smaller without sacrificing quality. Because you'll find that when you output a file from even iMovie, but especially from Final Cut Pro, that HD file that's in glorious 1080p is huge. And you want to upload this file to YouTube. And even with broadband, you look at the size of the file and you know that you have broadband, but it's still going to take a day. That's not fun at all, is it? You want your video on YouTube now, or you want to put it in Dropbox and not compromise someone's entire internet connection as they download the file to their computer. That's what compressor is for. Compressor has multiple settings and custom settings and the ability to customize your settings to take a big video file and turn it into a smaller video file, at least in size, without sacrificing quality. So you can still have that big, beautiful 1080p, 5-minute video that you're going to put up on YouTube, and you can have it at about half to one-third of the size that it was. That's kind of cool, and that sort of makes it worth it. Even if you're not going to use Final Cut Pro, you can send pretty much any video through compressor and see how it does. Some videos it doesn't do that good a job with because they're already compressed in some way, shape, or form. But if you're doing video editing in iMovie or Final Cut Pro, or anything else really, get compressor and send it through there. It'll take a little time to do the conversion, but that's time spent that you don't have to spend it uploading it to YouTube or wherever else you're going to send it. Makes it a lot easier and a lot smaller. So software utilities aren't the sexiest thing in the world, and that's okay because they're supposed to be utilitarian in nature, right? So I'm going to talk about just a couple of utilities that I use and just touch on them real quick so we can get onto something a little bit more pretty and things like that, things that are a little bit more interesting. However, I do think you should know about things like Atext, which is the first utility I'm going to talk about. And Atext is spelled lowercase a, capital T-E-X-T. And Atext is a text expansion app that does everything that Text Expander does for a fraction of the price. Now, if you have no idea what I just said, let me do a quick explanation. A text expansion app is basically a little bit of software that sits in the background and is waiting for you to type a sort of given phrase. Now, this phrase doesn't actually have to be a phrase. It can be absolute gibberish, so long as you've set it to do something. So, for instance, I've got Atext set to do things like my default signature, my email signature that I would normally put on a personal email. If I type the phrase defsig, which is short for default sig, so D-E-F-S-I-G, that's not a combination of letters that you would normally type in any given sort of email or book or whatever it is you're typing. That's not a word. That's not really even part of a word. So If I type defsig, it erases defsig and replaces it with my default email signature. And it will do that in any email. So I can have that happen in an email client. I can have that happen on the web browser. I can have it happen anywhere. So that's kind of cool. And that saves me the time of maybe copying and pasting it out of a file or something like that. Now, I also have this set up for my work signature, where if I type worksig, W-O-R-K-S-I-G, yet again, a series of letters that is not a word or really not part of a word, and it will do the same thing, except it replaces it with a totally different email signature, one geared towards my work. Now, you can do all kinds of stuff like this, and it can be anything that you type on a regular basis. I know people, and I've listened to podcasts by people who basically say, if I have to type something more than twice, I turn it into a text expansion trigger. Now, the nice thing about ATEXT is not only does it do this text expansion, but it can also do some simple scripting. So not only will it, you know, replace the text, it will send key commands and codes and things like that. And you can kind of dive in and figure out how that can work for you. But it's also dirt cheap. It's not free, unfortunately, but it is $5. I mean, for $5, you're going to save yourself hours of work within the first month of using it. I bet an hour to you is worth more than $5. So I would check it out, ATEXT, links in the show notes, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. One of my favorites here, I have to share this. I have a trick called table flip, you know, T-A-B-L-E-F-L-I-P. It's all one word. And if I do that, it's replaced by sort of the emoji, emoticon, whatever you want to call it thing of the guy flipping the table. That way I don't have to go look that up. I don't have to remember how to type that. I don't have to remember all the little codes. I just sought it out, copied and pasted it into ATEXT, said, hey, every time I type table flip, I want my table flipping guy to show up. And he does. It's great. So check that out, ATEXT. Links in the show notes, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Now then, there are all kinds of basically cloud storage solutions out there. We've even talked about it as early as the last show. But I want to talk about the one that I choose to use all the time. Now, I do use all of them to some degree. I have a Google Drive. I have a Dropbox. I also have a OneDrive, and I love me some OneDrive because I also happen to have a shared subscription to Office 365. And with Office 365, you do not get a couple gigabytes of storage on OneDrive. You don't get 100 gigabytes of storage on OneDrive. You do not even get 500 gigabytes of storage on OneDrive. You get a full-on, honest-to-God terabyte, plus some. Because theoretically, the storage space on OneDrive is fairly well unlimited so long as you have an Office 365 account. Now, that storage space is not just for Office documents. If you have a terabyte of Office documents, I believe you have a problem, my friend. It's for anything. And I love OneDrive for that. So I use OneDrive as sort of my cloud storage solution of choice for that reason. If you are looking at an Office 365 solution for your Office needs, well, OneDrive sort of puts that cherry right on top. Now, the funny thing is, which we'll get into this here in a second, I don't use Microsoft Office, but I do use OneDrive. And anything I send up to OneDrive that is sort of sensitive in nature, I encrypt the heck out of that, and I use Veracrypt for that. Now, Veracrypt is open source, and yeah, if you've ever used TrueCrypt, Veracrypt is just the sort of continuation of TrueCrypt after the weird sort of happening where the TrueCrypt developers threw their hands up in the air and said, we're done with this and we're out. And they didn't even bother dropping the mic when they left. I think they just took the microphone with them. But that's okay. If you've used TrueCrypt, you can use Veracrypt. There are very few differences between the two. So that's the utility stuff. You've got a text expansion that will save you tons of time on stuff that you don't have to keep typing over and over and over again. By the way, if you're a coder, wow, text expansion can really save you some time. You've got OneDrive for all your cloud storage needs, and you've got VeraCrypt for securing your stuff on your computer and up in the cloud. Okay, so I just talked about writing things and having, you know, an Office 365 product, but I don't use Microsoft Office. That's because I use LibreOffice. LibreOffice, I've talked about this before, we're not gonna harp on it. LibreOffice is simply an open source Office suite with a word processor, a spreadsheet, a presentation thing like PowerPoint, stuff like that. LibreOffice is great. Sure, it's not as full-featured as Microsoft Office. It's not even as full-featured as Pages, which comes with the Mac these days. That's fine, because LibreOffice does everything I need it to do. I am a very simple man when it comes to my documents and writing. As a matter of fact, nothing starts in LibreOffice, but everything finishes in LibreOffice. Not the least of which is there's some great plugins for LibreOffice that can do things like generate an EPUB file based on your text document and things like that. Good stuff. Links in the show notes. Go pick up LibreOffice if you need a good Office solution and you don't want to spend all that money on Office 365. So, okay. We're going to talk about writing and coding here. So let's talk about coding, just to sort of get that out of the way. I'm a web guy. I code in HTML and JavaScript, a little bit of jQuery. jQuery is very, very touchy for me. I can do it, but I'm not comfortable with it. So HTML, JavaScript, you know, things like that, PHP, occasionally some C#, stuff like that. You know, I dabble. So I need a web IDE of some kind. I need an integrated development environment to do some coding in, if for no other reason than syntax highlighting is awesome. And I don't want to pay a whole lot of money for it because I'm not a professional coder per se. I do get paid to code, but it's not the only thing I do. So if I'm writing code on my Mac, I'm writing code in TextWrangler. Now, TextWrangler is a free solution brought to you by the same people who do BBEdit, which is not a free solution. Now, BBEdit, from what I've seen and used of it, is awesome. If you need some pro-level goodies, BBEdit is a good place to look. Whether or not you buy it, that's up to you, because pretty much TextWrangler does everything I need it to do. It can manage multiple files. I can search across multiple files. It has syntax highlighting that just seems to be automatically built in for anything that I'm going to write. I have Xcode. I use Xcode occasionally, but really, for web stuff, TextWrangler is where I usually wind up. As a matter of fact, let me tell you a quick story, and I promise to keep this short. A WordPress site that I kind of look after got hacked, and turns out that it was just sort of the template was compromised. But to make sure that everything was on the up and up, to make sure that everything had been wiped out, I just downloaded all of the template stuff and all of the stuff that would actually contain content and opened it up in TextWrangler and did a global file search for the thing that had shown up. And TextWrangler sort of helped me suss out and sort out where this thing had been compromised and helped me make the decision as to what I needed to do to fix it. So for a free sort of IDE that's simple to use and easy on the eyes, TextWrangler is really, really good. Now, I've talked about Evernote. I'm not going to get into a whole thing on Evernote because I've done a show on Evernote too. I use Evernote everywhere. I've tried different solutions. I've tried different note-taking things. I actually did a stint with OneNote over the last month or so just to see if I liked OneNote. And the answer is I do like OneNote. I like OneNote very much, and I like Evernote more. So I've stuck with Evernote. So yeah, if you're interested, I did an entire show on Evernote. I'll include a link in the show notes, or you can just go back into the archive, go get it. Evernote's free. For just a regular thing, I have a premium subscription that actually I didn't pay for it. The best I can tell is I bought a phone and my phone came with a free year of Evernote premium. Okay. So yeah, I do have Evernote premium, but the thing is I will probably keep Evernote premium. It's fairly inexpensive. You can pay it yearly. I'll do that. So Evernote, dig that. Now let's talk about a simple coding solution. And by simple, I mean text. Now you might say, well, text isn't code. Yes, but it can be. Now, when I take notes, I typically will write them in Evernote, or I might write them in just a simple text editor. You know, I just pull up whatever's available right now. And you can bet that sooner or later, I get into Markdown. Now, if you've never used Markdown, Markdown is almost a show in and of itself. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking about doing a show on Markdown. But Markdown is a way of writing text using just simple little codes and simple little tags that eventually renders out as full-blown HTML. So you're just writing stuff in a text editor, but if you're doing it the right way and you export it as, or you basically save it as a Markdown file, you'll be able to export that text into a web page. A simple one, but a web page nonetheless. And that, for me as a web guy, is very, very useful. Now, there are all kinds of editors out there for Markdown, but the one I use on OS X is called Macdown, M-A-C-D-O-W-N. Macdown is an open source Markdown editor for OS X, and it's brilliant. Now, if you've ever used a Markdown editor, there's nothing really new and exciting where, you know, where Macdown is concerned, but there's nothing wrong with that. Some software is just simply useful as it is and does not need to have a whole lot of bells and whistles. So if you happen to be using a Mac and you happen to write yourself some, you know, you happen to find yourself in the need of a Markdown program, well, Markdown is probably the best place to go, in my opinion. You get the whole split screen thing where your editor is on the left side and the HTML web preview is on the right side, and you know, you're writing on the left, you're seeing your results on the right, so you get real-time feedback as to what you're doing and how this is going to look. It also has several preset templates that you can export as a web page, so you can kind of change the background, you can tidy up the text, make the text look a certain way, make it easier to read depending on what your settings are. All of that, and if all else fails, you can just simply write your own CSS style sheet and do it on your own. So Markdown is great for that. Like I said, there's not a whole lot of bells and whistles compared to some of the other programs, but it is what I would consider feature-rich and pretty well feature-complete. I have yet to go into Markdown and think, oh God, I wish it had this one thing. I've never found the one thing that I didn't find. It seems to have everything that I need. So check that out. Markdown is great for those Markdown things. Now you might ask, well, why bother? What good is Markdown to me? Well, I'll give you my own personal story here. Most all of my notes, especially long lists of links, which is hard to say, lists of links are sort of problematic in Evernote when you're trying to take those lists and bring them into WordPress. You know what isn't problematic when you're taking a list of links and trying to move it into WordPress? Taking it from HTML and moving it into WordPress. I can literally write my list of links in Markdown, which I do in Markdown, and then I just take what it shows me and I copy that and drop it into WordPress. It's wonderful. And it's free. So yeah, even if you're just playing around with Markdown or you just want to fiddle about with it and see if it's useful, get that. It's a great place to start. You can always move up if you need to. All right, finally, let's wrap this up. Let's talk about entertainment. Let's talk about the good stuff. And pretty much, I like to listen to music. I like to listen to lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of music. There are several things online that I like to listen to, and I do like a lot of internet radio stations. Now, Clementine I've spoke of before, and Clementine is a open source and full-featured music solution. I mean, it will take care of your music library. You can play MP3s and all that kind of thing with it. I don't have any MP3s in Clementine. I use it specifically as a way to manage all of my internet radio streams, which it does brilliantly. It even comes with a bunch of streams already set up. So, for instance, I'm a big fan of Soma FM. They've got some great channels. They've got great music on Soma FM. So I listen to that a lot, and I almost always listen to it in Clementine because the Soma FM channels are just right there. So looking at it right now, I see Drone Zone, I see Groove Salad, I see Lush. I mean, these are three of my favorite channels on Soma FM. And they're just right there in Clementine. But they've got more. They've got the Sky channels, so they've got Sky FM. If you've got music in your Google Drive, you can hook that up to your Clementine and play it from there. You can also hook Spotify into your Clementine as well and sort of control your Spotify right there. You don't have to open both. You can just open one. And to be honest, while Spotify is nice, Clementine gives you that ability to mix and match your Spotify lists with your online radio stations. So if you get bored of one, you can always just pop over to the other and listen to something else. Clementine also supports Dropbox, OneDrive, Box. So if you've got music in any one of those cloud storage solutions, you can hook those up to Clementine and just play them from there. And of course, there's also SoundCloud. So if you've got a SoundCloud account, or you listen to SoundCloud and you like the things that you hear on SoundCloud, it's got that along with digitally imported Last.fm. I mean, it's there. Chances are it's there and it's available for you. If it's not, say, for instance, you're like me, you're a big fan of video game music, which I am. One of the channels I like to listen to online is No Life Radio. And No Life Radio is a very simple online radio station that does nothing but play video game music. It's wonderful, especially if you happen to be a nerd. And I do happen to be a nerd, so I love listening to video game music. And I can just take that and feed it into Clementine. I can say, hey, I want you to have No Life Radio as a source of music. And I copy and paste the URL, and now it's in there, and I can listen to it through Clementine. Wonderful setup, wonderful music player, totally cross-platform, works everywhere. I pretty much install it on any computer that I'm going to work with for a given, you know, for a long length of time. If it's going to be a computer that is technically mine, either at work or at home or whatever, yep, sooner or later, Clementine goes on it so I can listen to music. Now, I also mentioned Spotify. I'll just touch on it because pretty much everybody knows what Spotify is. Spotify is a subscription-based music service. They have a freemium model. I do have a Spotify account, so I don't have to listen to the ads, and so I can make multiple and mobile playlists and all of that stuff. So yeah, Spotify, Clementine, those are my go-to for music. And finally, VLC. Now, VLC I've talked about a bit too, and this is also an open source software project. VLC pretty much plays everything. That is sort of its claim to fame. Do you have some weird file that you know it's a video file, but it ends in an extension that you have no idea what that is? You can't open it in QuickTime. You can't open it in MPlayer. You should probably try opening it in VLC, and it will probably work. And beyond that, VLC has all kinds of stuff that people kind of forget about. I mean, did you know VLC is also a webcam streaming solution? So if you have a webcam that you might like to put out on the internet, or maybe on an intranet, or just on your network in general, VLC does that. Do you want to convert a given type of media to another given type of media? Say you've got a QuickTime movie and you want to make it an MP4 or something like that. Yeah, VLC does that too. Do you want to watch an online video? You know, sort of like Soma FM, but with video? Yeah, VLC does that too. VLC pretty much does almost anything you need it to, except edit video. But we've already talked about video editors, so we've already got the hookup there. So if you're just watching video, doesn't matter where the video comes from, VLC is pretty cool, and I suggest you check it out. Now, as I've said, we've got links to all of this stuff in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. And hey, if you have a moment, hit me up on cyberpunklibrarian.com, or leave me a message and tell me what you use on OS X, if that happens to be your operating system of choice, because I'm always looking for new ideas and new software. So if you've got a hot tip that you want to share with me and share with the audience, let me know. And hey, I think it's time to get out of here. And that wraps up another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian, a much longer show, I know, and I do thank you for sticking with me throughout it. And hey, hopefully you get some ideas for some software to try on that lovely Apple device of yours. Whether you think Apple devices are lovely or not, let's not start a flame war. I kind of do. I think they're pretty, but there are plenty of pretty PCs and Linux devices out there as well. So, hey, I know some of this stuff is not free, and I know not all of it is open source. And, you know, I tried to balance things out, and I hope I did, because while Logic Pro 10 and Final Cut Pro 10 are the very opposite of free, I would bet that for most of the people out there, iMovie and GarageBand will do just fine for them, and probably do even more than they expect them to, especially for a thing that just comes with the computer when you buy it. So hey, check out the links at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast where you can get more information about these different software packages, applications, whatever the kids are calling them these days. The beautiful ambient tune you're listening to in the background is Watching Whales on the Moon by Lee Rose Severe. Earlier in the show, you heard Illogical Boogie by Coconut Monkey Rocket and Namaste by Jason Shaw. As always, the opening track to the show is Belly Dance at Ibisu by Ryo Miyashita, and I will have links to all of that good stuff in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Cyberpunk Librarian is hosted by the Internet Archive at archive.org. If you're in the mood for a little video gaming, you should check out the Archive. I know that's something I talk about all the time, but I am a huge retro gaming fan. And when I can just sort of go to one place on the web and get my retro gaming fix, and it happens to be the Internet Archive, that is some cool stuff right there. So check them out. Internet Archive, great people doing great things, preserving and saving the internet, Internet Archive at archive.org. And join us this Friday for the launch of Intergalactic Librarian. It's high adventure in deep space with librarians, the adventures of Skylar and Jessica. Intergalactic Librarian harkens back to the halcyon days of pulp science fiction magazines and bad radio drama. We're going to be launching the first episode on Friday. If you caught that first episode on this very show, Cyberpunk Librarian, well, you know, you might just tune in just to hear it one more time, but, you know, it's a good place to start when you're starting at the beginning, and believe me, there are more episodes to come. So Intergalactic Librarian launching, hey, see what I did there? Intergalactic Librarian launches this Friday. Tune in. And with that, I'm going to wrap this up and get out of here and let you get back to your day. Thank you so much for tuning in to Cyberpunk Librarian. I will see you again in 2 weeks or so. I try and get this out every other Monday, but sometimes circumstances are not with me on that. But hey, until I see you next time, I just want to remind you that you don't have to be high tech to be low budget, but it certainly helps if you are a cyberpunk. Take care now.